Parshas Mishpatim follows immediately after Parshas Matan Torah, which exists in Parshas Yisro, and of course the section ends off Lo Sala B'malo Sal Mizbechi, the mitzvah not to go up the Mizbeach on the stairs. And the question has to be raised, why does the section of Mishpatim with all the different laws follow the issue of the Mizbeach? And Rashi explains that we learn from here that the Sanhedrin needs to meet in the semicircle so as not to sit in the Azara, but at the same time they need to sit close to the Mizbeach as possible. And this, of course, is learned from the Smichas HaParshios, from the proximity of this Parsha to the end of Yisro. So Ramban explains that the Psakim of Sanhedrin are binding on the rest of the people. And many assume that this means that it's binding even if the Sanhedrin is incorrect. Rav Shachter Shalita would often point out that this is actually incorrect, that even Talmidei Chachamim can make mistakes, and that the meeting of the Sanhedrin reminds us that they'll hopefully receive inspiration from the Mizbeach when they judge, not only for themselves, but from Siyata Dishmaya, that they should use logic, but also they need to be near the Mizbeach to be done din emes la'amito, to judge the true judgments. Alternatively, Rav Shlomo Volba, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, offered a different potential as to why the Sanhedrin had to be near the Mizbeach. Rav Volba suggests that the issue was one the understanding that a person can't be frum. Sometimes people think, oh, I'm close to the Mizbeach, so well, it's good. Rav Volba points out that a person can't be frum. He can't be close to the Mizbeach unless he's concerned with the Mishpatim and the Sanhedrin, which are symbolic of the mitzvahs bein adam lachaveros. To be truly frum, to be truly orthodox, one needs to be concerned not only with the Mizbeach, with his relationship with the Almighty, he also has to be able to be close to bein adam lachavero as well. Anyway, so the parsha begins, ve'ilai mishpatim asher tasim lefneim. President Richard Joe once spoke to us, and he told a story about a train accident in which the investigators tried to piece together the causes of the accident. And so they interviewed a signalman who swore to the investigators that he did as he was trained. In other words, he said he went out there and he waved the lantern as he was taught to do. The investigative board was about to find fault with the engineer until it finally dawned on them that, wait a minute, they also needed to ask the signalman to find out if he remembered to put batteries into the lantern and to turn the lantern on, not just wave it around. Rabbi Bernard Weinberger Shlita explains that the same thing happened at Mamad Har Sinai. We need the mitzvahs of the Mishpatim, which are logical and almost run on their own. That's true. But when we received it with the spark at Mamad Har Sinai, with the kolos and brakim, with the thunder and light show that came with Matan Torah, it was a factor that was supposed to ignite the Jews to stay on track. And whether we do or don't, that's the definition of the spark and how we utilize the spark in order to keep us focused on what is or isn't important. Anyway, so we read all about the Eved Ivri who goes ahead and gets sold. And after 7 years, he says, look, Haftias Adonias Ishtias Banai, I like my life here as a slave. Lo Eitzei Chavshi, so the Torah tells us that his master should bring him to the doorway and should prick his ear, and he stays in Eved until Yovel. And the question has to dawn on us, how would one ever choose Ritziah, the prick of the ear, over Cheirus, over freedom? So there's a rabbi in Cleveland, Ohio, of Label Sheinbaum, the author of Pninim, a very good friend and a wise individual who quotes from all over. And in one particular conversation we had, he quoted from Rav Yitzchak Malka of Israel, who is involved in the Misrad HaChinuch, who noted that when one doesn't know what one wants from life, he or she is enslaved. If you don't know how to make a decision in life, you become enslaved. And even though it's tough in life to make decisions, it becomes a responsibility. A free person has to choose to make life choices. It's only an eved, only a slave who stays enslaved to whatever he or she is. There are a lot of people in life who are unable to make decisions. The ability to make decisions in life is a sign of freedom. Rav Volba Zatzal adds that when one makes the bracha shalo asani aved every morning, thank God not making me a slave, you need to consider whether what it is that you are enslaved to, if anything. If one is worried about PR, than one's an Eved. If one worries about the title Yeshivish, that's Rav Obi's example, or in my book, Modern or Open, then you're not truly free. What you are is an Eved. A true Oved Hashem, the one who serves God, can't be enslaved to public opinion. You have to be enslaved to doing what's right, and what's right is Veinei Elokim, is what's in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Later on in the parsha, we will speak about eyes, and the Torah tells us, Ayin tachas ayin, that there's a responsibility to give an eye for an eye. And the idea, of course, Chazal tell us, is that you have to pay money in the place of a damaged eye. We don't believe in the Hammurabi code. So why is it that we use the word tachas instead of the more obvious ba'ad? It should be ayin ba'ad ayin, an eye for an eye. So the Vilna Gaon answers that if one looks tachas ayin, if you look at the immediate letters after ayin, after the letter ayin is the letter fe, after the letter yod is the letter chaf, and after the letter nun is the letter samach, so you get the letters of the word kesef, right? And if you rearrange them, you see that in the place of an ayin, you get kesef. And that's the little reminder that's in the Torah, a little hint to the fact that ayin tachas ayin means mamon, it means kesef. Very nice idea. In the middle of the parsha, we're told, im kesef taves amies ayinimach, when you lend money to a poor person who's with you, Rashi explains that a person has a responsibility to look at himself as if he is truly the poor person. That's how you go ahead. Talves aniyah, em kesef talves aniyah imach. So Mordechai Willig Shlita used to tell us that one can't properly fulfill the mitzvah tzedakah and chesed unless you establish a sense of unity with the recipient. If you look down on the poor people, or if your masa tzedakah is emotionally detached, then the mere giving of money is an incomplete mitzvah. So in the world of adversarial relationships, a banging and bruising, Rabbi Willig would tell us, of looks that kill, we're commanded to achieve unity between donor and recipient, between blesser and blessed. By viewing and loving our others as part of ourselves, Rabbi Willig would say, we transform negative forces into positive ones, and we merit HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bracha. It wouldn't be Parshas Mishpatim if we didn't spend a moment going back to Mamad Har Sinai and talking about the ultimate phrase uttered in this week's Sedra, that phrase being Nasa V'Nishma. And of course, the question has to be raised because Nasa V'Nishma is in the plural. Why don't we say E'esev V'Eshma? Why is it Nasa V'Nishma? So the Chidush Arim suggests that when everybody's in the same boat, we stick together. When we all have the same responsibilities as the Tzibur, we stick together. It's not Nasa, it's not Esav Eshma, it's Nasav and Ishma. That's part of what being a Jew is all about. It's not about each of our personal responsibilities to the Ribono Shel Olam, but it's about each one of us as a member of Am Yisrael and how we will serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anyway, the Torah tells us that afterwards, Vayal Moshe Yoshua Misharso, Moshe and Yoshua, his servant, arose. Remember, Moshe Tzvi Neriah is a Chetzadik Livracha of the Kfar HaRoeh, he points out that Yoshua was the same Yoshua who led the Jews in the Battle of Amalek at the end of Parshas Mishalach. He notes the irony that usually it's those who are generals who do not take orders well. They don't become known as Misharso, as his attendant. So they rather give orders. And yet, says Rav Neria, Yoshua demonstrates what it means to be a Talmud. When he's a general, he's a Talmud. When he's a Talmud, he's a Talmud. Not out of weakness. He's not bending over to Moshe Rabbeinu as a form of kfifa because of weakness, but rather out of the deference for what Moshe represented. Moshe emes v'saraso emes. And the same is true in our time. We live in a world where there are a lot of Talmidei Chachamim, but you know what? There are also a lot of Chachamim. And sometimes in our world, we're so quick to reject the Chachamim. We know better. It's better sometimes to be a little more kafuf. It's better to understand that we don't know everything. That's how somebody becomes a true leader of Am Yisrael. This Shabbos is Parsha Shkalim, which means not only is Parsha Shkalim going to be read, but a special Haftorah is going to be read as well. And this week's Haftorah selection comes from the story of Yehoash and how he was Mechazik Perek Habayis. The Torah tells us, Ben Sheva Shanim, Yehoash became king when he was 7 years old. The truth of the matter is, a little background to the storyline is important because Yehoyada HaKohen had hidden Yehoash in the Cheder Hamitos. He had hidden him in the room of the beds, which, according to Chazal, was the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In order to protect Yehoash from the evil Queen Asalia, was trying to destroy the Davidic line, the line from David HaMelech. And unfortunately, it was after the death of Yehoyada that Yehoash went down the wrong path, ultimately murdering going so far as to even murder Zechariah, who dared chastise him. Why are you going off the way? And so, of course, the question has to be raised, if this was going to be where this individual was going to go, where he deemed that he was close enough to be God by virtue of the fact that he had this unique relationship whereby for 6 years he was able to hang out in the Kodesh Kadashim. So the question has to be asked, why was Yehoash chosen by Hashem to be saved? So the great Rav Moshe Wolfson Shlita, the Mashgiach of Torah Vadas, the Rav of Beis Medrash Amunas Yisrael, suggests that the secret of Machatzis Hasheka, which Yehoash chose to strengthen, is in the fact that Machatzis Hasheka understands the value of each Jew. No one soul is more valuable than another one, as each piece serves a particular piece of the Jewish mosaic. Yehoash understood that, says Rav Wolfson. When did he figure it out? When he was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where each Jew stands alone. That is to say, whoever's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is there by himself. And the value of each Jew is a worthwhile lesson at the Jew's own level. That lesson, which is the lesson of the Chatzi Shekel, which is the lesson of the Chizik for Berak HaBayis, was reason alone to save Yehoash and use him to preserve the Davidic line. We are at a period in our lives, in the Jewish calendar, where the focus on the nation, but also the focus on the individual as part of the nation, is crucial. And therefore, it's incumbent upon each of us to understand our value and make our contribution, not only financially, but beyond, for the benefit of Am Yisrael. Shabbat Shalom to all.